Okay, so we're gonna pick up with the Pluto and Scorpio thing with the this progression starting that we started yesterday afternoon. People in that generation have the soul level intention of becoming empowered through Scorpio stuff. So, learning about intensity, power, intimacy, sex, but all of it has to do with becoming empowered through learning about power. When do you take it? When do you give it away? When is the best time to do either? Or is that model inappropriate and needs to be upgraded? So all those kinds of questions. The fears and the wounding have to do with being overpowered by others or in making choices that are destructive that overpower the self. There's this intensity that when you live through the lens of Scorpio, you can't help but feel it. So you can think about people you know with Scorpio suns or even moons or inner planets in Scorpio or ascendant and stuff like that. But when Pluto is there, there is this kind of it's kind of jacked up because Pluto, the planet of intensity and learning about all this stuff in the deepest way, is in the sign of learning about things in the deepest way. So some of their fears have to do with giving away too much. Now, that can lead to a resistance to showing who they are, in fact. Because knowledge is power. So if I tell you who I am, if I reveal to you what I'm really feeling and what I'm about, you might be able to use that against me later. But it doesn't always have to be that you have nefarious motives. It can just be that since you know something, you can actually stumble upon my fear button. And so I might try to keep myself secret, what's going on internal. So it's not that they're all secretive, but there's going to be a line where they don't cross, many of them don't cross about revealing the self and being upfront and honest about what's really happening. Scorpio is a sign of feeling very intensely. It's like the water sign with all this depth. And so, are you a Scorpio? Because you're not a. Yeah! Okay, well, yeah, we're going to get to your. Okay, got it. Okay. So, yeah, so it's this feeling and depth. And so, at the soul level, they crave depth. They need to reveal who they are on the deepest levels. And they need to see who other people are on the deepest levels. But, you know, building on the intention, we have to understand this archaeological or this layering of strata above that of the debris from experience. So, and everybody who has anything in Scorpio knows there are times when you reveal, or eighth house, you reveal something, the truth, and somebody looks at you with disdain or judgment. And how that feels. So these people at the soul level are experiencing that in many, many, many lives. The depth of emotions can lead to destructive patterns because if you don't know what to do with your emotions and your pain and the sense of betrayal and the sense of I'm so intense I can't really show myself because then it's too much for other people, that's another thing. Needing the truth, needing exposure, and yet believing in some way it might be too much for others and so holding something back. And practically speaking, some of these things can come out as looking for peak experience. There's, you know, I made a joke with somebody last night here about, oh, we're going to talk about Pluto and Scorpio, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Because there's this intensity of experience that's necessary, and so sometimes, you know, behaviors and experiences are brought in to intensify life, and so, you know, there's a lot of issues about sexuality as it relates to power and truth and honesty and you know, revealing the self and seeing others that comes through with the Pluto and Scorpio. So a lot of them unconsciously, you know, will have a lot of beliefs, karma, about sex being about power one way or another. Yeah.
Like dominating something?
Yes. Yeah. Because they've been They've dominated and they've been dominating in the service of learning the soul level journey. They've had experience in all these lives of power over and under when it comes to anything, including sexuality. So if you play word association games with people in different generations, you'll find the Pluto and Scorpio people probably holding back a little, but if you could read their minds, you know, there's a lot of darkness that might automatically associate, not that they're dark people, but they've been conditioned in this very deep way with this experience of the heavier, more intense things in life. I'll tell you this. I had a girlfriend with Pluto and Scorpio, and she when we started talking about this, getting to know each other, and I was telling her, well, this is what your generation is kind of experiencing in the background, you know, the soul level. And she humbly, almost embarrassedly admitted that when she was a kid, she and her playmates, their favorite game was playing rape. Not like, you know, cops and robbers, cowboys and Indians, but yeah, there was no rape happening, but that kind of drama playing out. And so I was explaining to her that, well, yeah, all of you are in that same age bracket and you're trying to, so you're processing past life things. So it can get really intense. Now, the gift of empowerment is in being honest. If they're willing, you know, is in honesty and actually inspiring other people to be honest and upfront and real, if they can process their own emotions. If they can learn to heal power over and under. And, you know, I was talking yesterday about, you know, a different way of looking at Plutonian empowerment that's about absolute self-knowledge and absolute self-acceptance. If they can get there, then that's healing the history of power over and under in all arenas of life, including sex, drugs, rock and roll. And, but the gift is reality. Now, their criticism to the Libra generation is, you are so concerned with what everyone else is thinking about you, you don't even know what's real. You don't even know what you'd really say from the bottom of your heart because you're so trying to be liked. So that's kind of the natural Scorpio criticism for Libra as it follows. 1984 to 1995. Yeah, so 1984 to 1995. This is also another interesting thing to talk about as kind of an interstitial note, is that when you look at trends that sociologists and psychologists observe, even economists observe, over time you will see things like suddenly there's this great increase in teen suicide, or, you know, we've noticed over the last 20 years the prevalence of what, you know, these things, right? And look at when these pieces of information are coming out, when the minds of the scientists, social scientists, are observing the patterns, but then B, the population, the age of the population they're talking about. So there's, you know, looking at the rates of teen suicide in the Pluto and Virgo generation is one thing, and then sexual molestation with kids with Pluto and Scorpio. Anyway, that's a side note, but it's good. It's good research.
Just out of curiosity, Amy Winehouse, whatever.
Oh, Amy Winehouse?
Yeah. Pluto and Scorpio?
Oh, gosh.
Or Libra.
Do we know what year she was born? I'm going to look it up. That's why I had the computer on, obviously.
I think it's Libra. A radical singer
She was 20. She was the part of the
30. She's been Saturn return.
27.
So. 27.
So she's Pluto in Libra.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay. But yeah, I mean, obviously there are, you know, people in all walks of life who are having those kinds of experiences all over the place. But she kind of stands out for that. Because it's not, it's not always true that these things haven't been happening, but our consciousness is able to now wrap itself around some tragedy that's widespread, and then B, the soul groups are creating certain experiences. And we haven't even, the whole teen suicide with the Pluto and Virgo generation, we haven't even healed any of that, but it came up for awareness. you know, like we haven't understood, because we still don't have any idea what to do with suicide anyway, which is another 2-day workshop. But so that's kind of the Scorpio thing, empowered through truth, but terrified of being overpowered or overpowering others. Actually, one more note about that. There's this thing, and Annette was actually telling me this morning about the song, the sound of silence and communicating without speaking. We got that phrase. And there's a thing about Scorpio energy where that's something that comes in play. And so when you're dealing with Scorpionic people, you can kind of tell where they are, and including 8th house and Pluto and Scorpio people, by how much eye contact they can make with you. And if they're kind of in a healthier place, they can stay with you until you're like, whoa, I need to disengage for a bit. But there's like this intensity that comes even just through the eyes from the looking, because it's this emotional thing. And so, you know, you'll find people with Pluto and Scorpio need contact, but they might not always be clear about the best way to create it. Yeah. Okay, so that's the Scorpio thing. Lots of drama. So Sagittarius comes along. The natural criticism of Sagittarius to Scorpio is you don't even have any clue about what's important, because you're just cycling through this drama with the sex, drugs, and rock and roll. You're so wrapped up in your emotions. You're so like bogged down in creating drama where there might not even be any, that you can't even have joy or see the big picture. So that's where Sagittarius comes in. So this group with the Pluto and Sagittarius is at the soul level intending to have faith, hope, optimism, to have something to believe in. And they are empowered through believing in something, which often, because of the disempowering Pluto experiences over many lives, can only come through looking at the disillusionment. This is actually Pluto in the ninth. We're talking with Annette, and I wanted to frame it in a way that says, in each religion, or searching through each religion, you have been disempowered, but you keep doing it, or disillusioned, but you keep doing it until you find what allows you to maintain a spark. So that's Pluto in the ninth. That's a similar thing with this Pluto in Sagittarius. They need to believe. But many of them will be sardonic, sarcastic, unable to believe, disillusioned, growing up within religious structures, but feeling bereft, empty, dearth of meaning, surrounded by people who are like, God said this and we're, everything's great. And they're like, how can you possibly believe that? But they'd grow up in that. Or, like Annette, jumping wholeheartedly in. Did you say you were preaching at 11? Is that what you said? At 11.
Evangelize.
So, you know, so that's the other thing, is like wholehearted. This is what's jumping in, because that's the passion at the soul level, the conviction. Religion is a vehicle for meaning and truth. So this Pluto and Sagittarius, not all of them are going to be religious, you know, obviously, but they're going to be dealing with issues about belief. They're going to have issues with empowerment through higher mind function. Some of these people have disempowered educational experiences. Many of them will have incredibly strong imaginations that they might want to limit so they don't get themselves in further trouble. But the imaginative quality within them, the imaginative energy, absolutely, the power of the gods coming through imagination, through the right brain, through the ability to envision something and hold it in the mind, like hold it. And then be able to create it. So we talk, you know, sometimes I have this like poo-poo idea when it comes to faking it till you make it. I might have mentioned this yesterday because I talk about it all the time, because part of me, my Saturn says, Jupiter in Capricorn, Saturn in the ninth goes, you can't just fake it till you make it. That's, you know, it's fake. It's not real. But this right brain, it is true. You create you create your reality through your beliefs. And if you hold certain beliefs in a certain way, you actually create reality that way. Not that it's easy, but holding the vision. So these people become empowered through doing that. Some of the experiences in various lives that have left them totally disempowered and disillusioned have to do with doing that and then finding out a truth that makes what they were believing in false. And that can be within religion. This is the truth, but then finding out some higher perspective spiritual truth, like natural law truth, that ruined the belief. Like, you know, you could be doing this for 30 years. You could be believing this way, living this way, raising your family this way. And then you find out. So it's like this the rug pulled out from under your capacity to believe.
Would those people be inclined to think that they might have the answers, so they would be people that say, I think I know that you should follow me.
Yes.
Because I have dogma. Because mm-hmm. I have friends who are secretaries mm-hmm. and so strong about what they believe.
Yes.
They think we are the ones you should follow.
Exactly. This is one of the things that comes with this. There's also a thing, like, fitting with that, or kind of looking at the layers of that, is that they need to believe, they need to have something to believe in, but they can get so fixed that they can't take in new information, and they can't listen to other people, and they can't get new ideas. So they get stale, stuck, and that Sagittarius is the archer, and it's not about drawing the bow, it's about what happens when you release the bow. It's gone. It's like in flight. It has its own momentum and energy. So the truth about Sagittarius energy is that you need to believe something, but you can change your mind halfway through and upgrade your belief or switch it. But people who are living Sagittarius stories don't want to know that, because that seems like it makes everything, it cheapens everything.
Flaky,
exactly. And so there are people who live the energy who do change their minds and seem flaky. Like, even like, you wouldn't necessarily first look at him and say he's a Sagittarian figure, but Noam Chomsky, the linguist. This is my philosophy. And he's just clear. And people, you know, make their minds do acrobatics to be able to digest it. I mean, he's a philosopher, he's a linguist. But people, you know, but it's, there's that belief idea. He lays out his philosophy. And then years later, he goes, you know, I'm changing my mind about pretty much all of that. So here, the next publication, here's where I am now. And everyone goes, now everyone has to, like, make their minds bend over backwards to understand it. But they're like, no, but he's right. And then years later, he's like, I'm heading in a different direction. And there are people who are with him, and there are people who are frustrated, and there are people who hate it. But he's like a Sagittarian figure. He's like, here's the truth. No, I know, I'm sure. And then he lets himself change his mind when it seems like he should.
And he was influential in many circles of education.
Exactly.
Everything. And no one wanted to change that base.
Exactly.
I saw that happen.
Yeah, you saw that. Yeah, as before me, but you saw that happen, yeah.
We didn't want that to change because that was our base.
That's right. You just gave us...
That was the perfect base.
You just gave us a piece of the truth, and now you're going back on it, and he's like, well, it doesn't seem to work anymore. So that's a good model for all of us who are Sagittarius. Like, I have Moon, Mercury, Neptune there. And I have Saturn in Sagittarius' house and Jupiter. You know. So it's like, you know, I take that model, and there are things I change my mind about. Like the Soul's Journey 1, Pluto is step number 3 in the 4-step process. And now I actually use it as number 1. It seems to work better. And the book will be revised eventually to reflect that. But, like, it seems to work better. It feels better. So, you know, not so we need to believe something, but the risk is becoming dogmatic and inflexible. That's the point. Yeah.
My ex was agnostic. I became an extreme Islamic.
Oh, you did?
Uh-huh. And
you really did all of it.
My daughter was a Buddhist at the time.
Uh-huh.
And my son was a Christian, so... And we were all living in the same...
Do you all have specialized diets? You make them 5 dinners at 4 dinners? I can eat meat, but only this kind, you know?
That's after they went through many, many religions with me and decided to have their own.
Great.
Yeah.
So, but the flexibility and change of giving yourself. So these people with the Pluto, I don't want to get too far off track with it, but I'm doing it. But you know, Pluto and Sagittarius, they need to believe something. They need to be one directional. And the blind, one of the blind spots is being too one directional and not being flexible with reality. So humans have a natural need to believe, and these people, to believe in something and seek meaning, these people are majoring in that at the soul level. But there's been a lot of disillusionment and disempowerment through the beliefs, whether through being too fixed and dogmatic or believing in something that turned out not to be true. So if we can understand, and if they actually, this generation, and they're young, this is 1995 births through 2008. They're young. The oldest is 16. And if they can understand this basic truth that humans need to have meaning, need to seek meaning, need to create meaning, but that we also evolve over time, so what we plug in that meaning port can change, then they'll be able to heal a lot of the stuff that they've been carrying around for a long time. So again, some of it will happen through religion, some of it will happen through the refusal of religion, you know, theist-atheist debate, you know. But it's all about belief and holding, being able to hold a vision in the mind. Okay, so then we have Capricorn, and of course the oldest of these people is 3. is 3 years old right now. The natural criticism for Capricorn to Sagittarius is about you're so focused in what you would like to be true that you can't just get off your butt and make something happen. Or you're so dreamy, you're so imaginative, you're so living in the imagination world, you can't actually accomplish, you choose not to accomplish something, so you never make anything of lasting value. And it's a criticism about tangible versus intangibles, because Sagittarius is very focused on creating tangibles out of intangibles, like creating the world in terms of belief, but Capricorn needs to create the world with the hands because of reality and necessity. So these people have the soul level intention of becoming empowered through constructing and building real structures. Long term through achieving long term goals, working hard at things. So it's going to be interesting to watch these little babies grow up into toddlers, and that, you know, and these people who haven't even been born yet. This is there till 2024.
So we're in 1996 on to.
Pluto in Sagittarius was 1995 to 2008, and then January of 2008 starts Capricorn, and that's till 2024. I believe 2024, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right around there. So, what they really, really need is to do something substantial in a concrete way. Like, that's what they need to become empowered through building something, through becoming mature, through becoming competent, through doing something well and being recognized for doing it well. It's a huge thing for them. And the wounding is being blocked from accomplishment, seeming to fail at achieving something. This is a lot about ambition, too. And so you can even look at many individual journeys with Pluto and Capricorn being they can become empowered through developing and executing ambition or developing and acting on ambition. So the karmic wounding can involve not acting on it, being blocked from acting on it, or not actually putting a plan in place. So we talked about Pluto and Virgo yesterday and the kind of criticism, because they can see perfection but might not be able to make it happen and have karmic histories of attempting to make something really better but maybe not achieving it all the time. And the Pluto and Capricorn people will have a similar kind of thing because of the expectations they have on themselves to be respected, to be good at something, and then to be recognized as being good at it. Because they're learning about, you know, power through becoming, through dealing with authority figures, ultimately the goal is they become authority figures, they're going to manifest authority figures that block them. Because they're learning about becoming empowered with Saturnian figures, Capricorn figures. So a lot of these kids will be born to parents who are just very big energetically and perhaps harsh. Not necessarily abusive, but there's going to be very distinct elder younger roles, where what is, you know, because they have questions at the soul level. What does it take to be authoritative? What does it take to be respected? What does age mean? Like, that's a thing for them, because they're going to naturally be inclined to respect people who are older. So they're also going to draw older people who are like kids, who can't teach them anything, who can't take responsibility for themselves or others. So you can see, like, this, the, you know, they need to become respectable, so they're going to draw a bunch of teachers who might not be. You can just know that for sure. Yeah. 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 And it's almost premature to talk really a lot about it, but in terms of this thread from Cancer to Capricorn, like, you know, for the people who are alive on Earth right now, it is really important.
My 3-year-old grandson, the thing that I noticed that's unique,
yeah,
is he will say, "Hi, Granny, how was your day? Did you work hard today? Was it good?"
Oh, it's about work?
It's about work. And he's an old soul already, right. Look at his eyes and
goodness. Uh-huh.
You can see that.
Right.
Yeah. So he's valuing work.
And here's another one. Is that my son and his wife have a 2-year-old.
Okay.
She was born on full moon with moon Pluto.
Okay.
Eclipse, too.
And her parents are like the kids that she's drawn as the teachers, but in reality, she's running the show.
Exactly.
I mean, I can see it. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
So I'm going, whoa, this can be very interesting.
Yeah.
They're little elders.
See, and so sometimes it'll come in as power struggles, but sometimes it'll just be the reversal of the young one teaching, controlling, and yeah. And then how that kid is going to grow up to be an authority figure, having been kind of in that dynamic as a kid, you know, lots of soul growth possible in a family, being the youngest generation, you know. That's interesting. So that's kind of the Pluto and Capricorn thing. It's you know, respect and autonomy are giant. Like, part of the wounding can be that they didn't get the elbow room to work on their projects, their long-term goals. So you'll have some with, like, family, you know, karma of being one of 11 kids on a farm hundreds of years ago, where you can't work on something until you're an adult. But there might be a kid with, like, a vision of some project, even some invention, some something, you know, something. And, yeah, so if they can take models of authority that they're presented with, basically, like, if they can be forgiving with the models they're presented with, like, this is how my parents are raising me, and wow, that is dumb, and that's stupid, and they shouldn't do it that way. You know, if they can take the models they're presented with as learning opportunities but be compassionate about it, that's actually going to be hard, put on Capricorn. Not for everyone, but like for a lot of them, it's going to be hard because they're going to have judgments about how things are supposed to go. And the final authority, assuming they're the final authority. And they'll be really good at certain things. So they'll feel authoritative, but they'll be 7 years old. and not understanding anything else other than the thing they're good at. So it'll be interesting to watch unfold. Yeah. So that's the Pluto thing. And I was talking with Michael yesterday. You mentioned to me that after we had that conversation about the first few signs, about the history, you know, tying it to history. And you can look at the history of any country, social movements, political change, economic unfolding, because of, you know, based on the decisions that individuals are making. And again, the two things, the time in which they're making those decisions and then how they're wired natally. What's the age group who are making it, you know, the age group is doing this. It's really interesting. But then also to keep in mind that natural criticism that each has of the other. And, you know, signs that are next to each other will have a automatic natural criticism. Signs that are two away from each other will be sextile. So they might not have a criticism, it might be a little more supportive, but they do have input. So you can look at how Libra might offer constructive feedback to Leo, or Scorpio to Virgo, or Virgo to Cancer. Like, you can look at those relationships. And then you can also look at a Pluto and Scorpio person who has a grandparent with Pluto and Leo, natural square. They might automatically get along, love each other, be supportive, but they have some criticisms for each other. usually the criticism, we hear the criticisms of older people to younger people, because that's like we're accustomed to being concerned about how we're raising our people. You know, like we're in the, oh, like, well, you shouldn't do that because of this. But it also goes the other way, you know. Like your kids were talking to you today about something. And like they're, you know, and they're looking at your Leo and they want to help you with your Leo. And it's like the same, they're Libra and Leo, they're sextiling you. You know, so there's like something in there too. And you know, I'm really interested in family dynamics and generational dynamics because, you know, you're fundamentally wired in different ways from each other. And I'm, when I'm clear, I'm really good at Libra. And when you're clear, you're really good at Leo. When you're clear, you're really good at Virgo. And so we have, you know, these different ways of doing things. And when I say really good at, I mean that the most empowered thing you could possibly do is that. Like your soul is saying, I need to become expert because my emotional health rests on becoming expert at being this, this through this lens. So that's my thing on that. Oh, yeah, please.
President Obama is the first Pluto in Virgo.
Yeah.
To
be in office. Yeah, that is interesting. I think when we get a couple more, we'll be able to really understand more about it. But like it is different than the Leo
the whole
and
thing
Cancer.
About him being a servant and going out to the communities and kind of grassroots.
Right.
The power in the grassroots there.
Because he started as a community organizer. Because
right.
He did that before.
Organizer,
right. Yeah. Well, there's no president who ever did that before.
Not to mention he's African American, right? Or
yeah. Yeah, mixed. Yeah. I haven't really gotten into his chart, but I was so to really look at the karma of it. But I was really excited when somebody found his birth time. It was totally because I'm going to do some work on that. So let's transition into looking back at charts. Any thoughts or comments percolating from anything we talked about yesterday? Just wrap up yesterday. Because I know you guys are jumping in as we go, and so that's cool. But just to give you the opportunity before we steamroll ahead. No? Okay.
It has been helpful having this historical thing.
Oh, yeah.
With each other. Our parents. And
yeah.
They really were sitting at that time.
Right.
And some of it is so relative to that kind of energy at that time.
Right.
The whole hidden thing with each of us. Family of mine hiding who they were.
Yeah.
1910, 1920, and they married in the Native Americans, and they wanted to hide that in the 30s and 40s. Or
right.
Some kind of, and then that whole thing about just the community, an exclusive community to themselves.
Yeah.
I can't remember what period you were talking about. But
cancer.
That, in cancer, yeah. They were in cancer.
Yeah.
Not even interacting with any other neighborhood around them.
Right.
Totally. As they completely
insulate.
I want to tell you something about my own family for a second. You're stirring this for me right now. I mentioned my grandmother yesterday and the whole purse wrapped around the wrist thing so the black people don't steal it. So when I was, I'm 38, when I was about 33, 34, I found, and I always knew my dad had kind of racist tendencies, and I always knew my sister kind of did. But when I was like 34, 35, my mom told me she did. And I said, how could I not know this? We're like really good friends. And I've been, you know, I'm a Scorpio, I'm a detective. How could I not know this? And she said, it wasn't any of my business to put that on you. You got to make your own decision. What I want to point out is my grandmother offered it to me, Pluto and Cancer. How can I protect my family? By telling them that these people are dangerous. Mm-hmm. My mom, Pluto and Leo. It's none of my business to tell you what to think. And I'm just getting that. I'm getting chills right now because it's just like my mom was like, I couldn't do that to you. Like, I the responsibility from her own opinion. It's not your opinion, and I don't want your opinion to be my opinion. If you came out that way, then you did. So I never knew. I mean, my mind was blown for like 2 years. And I had this conversation with my sister, and she didn't know either. Yeah, yeah. So
didn't
what?
Want to burden you with
that well.
Or,
yeah, she,
that wouldn't be helpful for us.
Right, for me to come up with my own thing because she values the autonomy, the Leo, the like your personal expression matters to you. I mean, she wouldn't say it this way, maybe, without the astrological perspective. But like, she doesn't want to be told what to believe, so she would never do that to Pluto and Leo.
Yeah.
Like, my opinion is what matters. So therefore, your opinion is what. And it's like a high side of Leo. Mm-hmm. You know, almost 3 decades, I never knew, or over 3 decades, I never knew. I mean, I was shocked. And then it's, you know, then dealing with the whole thing about, well, I'm the only person in my family who doesn't feel that way. That's weird, too. But, you know, like, but separately. So you can have these family threads that different people respond to in different ways because they have different soul level priorities. They're in different generations. Yeah.
That's my Pluto and Leo. That's how I raised my children. They didn't have to necessarily believe the way I didn't want them. And I didn't put any excess
great
on them and try not to. Of course, they happen by accident anyway, but...
That's right.
Yeah, that's why you're...
Yeah, exactly. And you, because the high side of the Pluto and Leo is to... Okay, just briefly, in this context, the low side of Pluto and Leo is not being able to deal with other people not sharing your opinion. The high side of Pluto and Leo is, my opinion is sacred to me, so I'm going to allow your opinion to be sacred to you. You might never know what I think about a certain thing. So, yeah. Yeah. So it does happen by osmosis, but it's, but like the Pluto and Cancer, my grandmother went out of her way to instruct me. Yeah. Of what, who was good and who was not, and yeah. But when you said insular and the hiding, that's what reminded me of it, because my grandmother was like that, but then made sure to tell me that, and which was a tool of for to teach me tribal. Exactly. Okay. I mean, I seriously could talk about that stuff for a week, because that's just like, ah, and I'm into the whole family generation thing, like, so.
I'm a Jew. I'm quarter Jew German.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, and I went to peer to peer wrapping my former person.
Right on.
In the car.
Yeah.
I don't know where I got it from somebody.
Well, the feeling of needing protection, feeling of being an outsider, you have to protect yourself and
wrap that person around that. Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
That's a great image.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it was at eye level for me. I was tiny, you know. Yeah, you
same
saw.
Heart, same everything.
Right.
And that was the French Jews.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
I don't think we interacted with anyone in the store.
Yeah.
And the people who are migrating over here are like that too.
Pardon?
People that are migrating over here are like that too.
Oh.
Not just Hispanic, but like the Islamic and Muslims and Hindu people, you know?
Yeah.
In their store. I don't care. I can walk up to one of them and say, Salaam Alaikum. And if they don't recognize me and know me, they won't say Salaam Alaikum yet. They won't
right
do that. They won't say peace yet. They don't know who I am.
Right. All right. Right.
But some will honor me.
You know, I really want to get to the charts, but I need to say one more thing. So. We all have refugee karma and immigrant karma.
Yeah.
Even at the level of, I come from this village to 200 miles away, and we had to relocate to your village. So the context is not, my 8 people came to your place of 350 million. So the context can be like, we just moved in next. So we all have that going on. We all have that going on. Yeah, we totally have it, because everyone's had to relocate and find new places to live and choosing to live. Okay. Okay. So let's go to Jillian's chart. This is the 4-step method. The first step is Pluto. And looking at the intentions and desires of the soul, the soul's empowerment journey, and the soul's wounding. And it's in Virgo in the 8th, and it's actually, looks like, what is it, a degree and a half? Yeah, about maybe a degree and a half from the 9th. I do know Jillian, and I just don't read it in the 9th very often, but we probably could. Because when a planet is close to the edge of the next house like it is, within a couple of degrees, a few degrees, sometimes we'd read it in both houses because the energy kind of bleeds over.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know. I'm going to focus on the 8th, partially because the underscore with the south node being in the 8th too. There's just a heavy, heavy emphasis on the 8th. Or maybe we'll improv and do the 9th too. But so Virgo in the 8th, you know, the soul's intentions are to become empowered through intimacy and trust, and we covered this with Glenna yesterday, so we have some of the same vocabulary words, though the journey is specific. Virgo, about responsibility for self, and then in the 8th house, learning about what one is really responsible for within a relationship, but then also an emphasis on making choices. becoming empowered through making choices within intimate relationship or within, you know, whether that's romantic, sexual, or business, or friendship, right? Or your lawyer knows all your dirty money secrets, that kind of business. So, this soul becomes empowered. Oh, did you have a question? Oh, sorry, I thought I saw your hand. Okay, my peripheral vision failed me. Okay, my peripheral vision failed me. Okay, so the intention is to become empowered through intimate relationship. But then you have all these layers of debris about the ability to trust, and the Virgo, the making choices about what relationships to be in and how to comport the self within them, is just a really big deal at the soul level. And it is, she points out to me that it is stationed, so there's a, which means that in any planet except the sun and moon, any planet in its orbital cycle relative to the Earth's orbital cycle will, from our perspective, seem to go backwards at certain times. That's what we hear about Mercury retrogrades, if you've ever heard about that. It's called the retrogrades are when, from the Earth's perspective, it never really goes backwards, but from our perspective, it appears to go backwards. So there are these times called stations in the orbit, and that is when the planet appears to be slowing down before changing direction either way. So you have these two stations that, you know, bookend the retrograde period when it appears backwards. And when, how I understand that is when that's happening in life, there's an energy emphasized. And like when Mercury is going retrograde and it slows down a station, all mercurial things, everything's very pointed and everything's very, it either works really well or it doesn't work at all or it's difficult, but the rhythm is abnormal.
It's not neutral.
It's not what?
It's not neutralized by this.
Correct. Correct. It stands out.
You'd think it would be.
Right. It's emphasized and it stands out. And how I think of it is that that Mercury is staring at you from across the room, but everyone else, it's like you're in a party and everything's moving, but like somebody's just staring at you. And like you're like, it's uncomfortable and you have to do something. It's kind of weird. So natally, when this happens, that energy is emphasized. Okay. So it's like, is it a couple days or a day or something?
It's a minute and 34 seconds.
I know a minute 34 seconds, but I mean like when it actually stopped. It's like real close. It's like,
it's
yeah.
34 seconds before I.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Stopped. Yeah, that was the exact station.
Okay. So, okay. Oh, you mean time wise, not degrees of arc. That's what I heard. Degrees of arc, but you mean time wise. That's what I'm talking about.
I'm talking about time wise.
Yeah, like Earth time. Okay, good. So it's right then. So there's like this emphasis on Plutonian energy, and it's in its own, you know, so to speak, its own house, the Pluto house.
Is it stationing direct or retrograde?
Well, it's stationing.
Okay.
Okay, so after the retrograde period.
Right, yes.
Okay, so it has just started. It would just start to tick. Okay. So it's like standing still, which means it's really emphasized. So how this Plutonian energy works, this is kind of separate from the soul's mission, but how this Plutonium functions within her is just highlighted. It's just like swollen. It's like big. It's like injected with a lot of air. It's like a big balloon. So everything we say about Pluto and how she experiences it has to be, kind of include that pressure, that kind of pressure from the inside out. The aspects of Pluto, and similar to Glenna, there's a square to Mars, so it's a different sign, and the square to Moon, which is actually where Glenna's Mars is. So these squares are friction to the Pluto. So the soul says, I'm going to learn about Mars in Cancer, which is about expressing the will in an emotional way, and I'm going to learn about Moon in Gemini. You know, it's more about emotions and needs and happiness through this lens of flexibility and new information and exploration, curiosity. I'm going to learn about those things by being in friction with them. So she will, at different times in all of these souls' lives, draw very emotional people to her who are very aggressive or assertive or very, very, very emotional but active about it. That's what I want to say. Emotional but active about it. And so she's learning through that. But again, as we talked about with Glenna's, you know, square from Mars to Pluto, that can manifest aggression in really uncomfortable ways. So we have the soul level intention to learn about it this way, but then also we have to, or she at some point is going to have to dig through the debris of what happened because of that intention. So for her, unraveling karma about this particular aspect is going to involve, when I've been hurt by others, why has that happened? And evaluate the assumptions that parts of her have, because parts of her, not her, if she's grounded and present and feeling spiritually sophisticated, parts of her will be imprinted by the emotional experiences in the past. And so they will then devise strategies to try to protect the self later. We all do it. So when I say, oh, if you have a belief about this, when you were hurt, part of you said, well, this is why it happened, so that I can keep my eye on the situation, the details and constituent parts kind of forming the picture of the thing that hurt me, so I can never let it happen again. It's like necessary and sufficient conditions. You know, I was hurt, and then I listed five reasons it happened. Then 35 years later, I think I can name three of those five conditions repeated in this scenario, and you kind of, your radar goes off. And so the parts have assumptions about why things happen. So for you, anytime that you have perceived that, you know, aggressive emotional energy has hurt you, squared you, right, and kept you from your mission, you know, the parts of you will have created beliefs, and that's the karma to unravel. So I do know some of your history, but if you do want to talk about something, or you want to give feedback or ask any questions about it, go right ahead. But like want to do it within this context of observing what the beliefs are about why it happens, and then changing them one by one. And you don't have to say anything, but just like giving you the opportunity. But I know your history, some of it, so I don't want to say too much. Yeah, or you can jump in too later. Yeah.
I know, I'll talk to you a little bit.
That's cool, that's fine, that's cool. I just want to give you the opportunity because I don't want to just like steamroll through it because I know that it's
so
different.
What she did imprinted upon?
Yes.
To come into this group with those implantations before birth, or were they after?
Ah. Well, it's happening holographically in all these lives. Okay. So she will, this particular human is born with the emotional memories of things that are imprinted, of things that are happening across the Earth timeline. It's holographic. So that's how, I talked about the veil dissolving between the partitions in consciousness, including past lives. One of the things and I'm not sure if I said it quite this way, but since I'm inspired to say it, maybe I didn't. It's all happening simultaneously from the emotional energetic standpoint. So 1250s in a rural China, on our way of thinking, because we believe we're tied to time, we link our consciousness to time because our bodies are tied to time. That thing, on the Earth timeline perspective, has already happened. Emotionally, from the soul's perspective, it's all happening right now. So this baby, this woman, as a baby born, she contains that and millions of other imprints. Some of them are louder than others, but she contains that imprint.
So, in a way, we're living all of these lives all at the same time.
From the soul's perspective, yes. And 10 years ago, I wouldn't have taught it this way. In another life, 300 years ago, I couldn't have taught it this way. Because now we're at the place of the evolution of consciousness where we're feeling the past life stuff. So what's on your mind isn't just what happened to you from 10 years ago. It's all of it. That's what's on your mind and heart. So it's happening simultaneously from the point of view of the soul. Yeah, that's why I emphasize soul so much. Because you're feeling it. And you're living the life in 1250 rural China, as well as 2000 BC Egypt, as well as, 3050 Idaho. Like, you're living all of them right now. Yeah. So she's born with that imprint, but it happened on the Earth timeline elsewhere. Okay.
Can you give a number of five?
Random assignation for when I got hurt in this scenario 10 years ago, I assigned five reasons it happened. Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Can I ask you a question? Did you say when you're in touch with maybe that wound, mm-hmm. And that wound comes up,
mm-hmm.
and maybe you have a little insight about where that pain comes from? are you on a realization level that you may be releasing karma from more than one life?
Only that.
So do you get visions or insights? Are you doing to stay connected with, is it to stay disconnected with that moment, with that time? You see, sometimes it takes you places and sometimes it doesn't take you places, or does it always take you places?
It depends. I mean, like when I feel the emotions, I mean, I feel that, you know, if I'm really in touch with my personal mythology, like, you know, dreams and things and lives, and I've done, you know, Akashic Record readings, and so I feel, you know, and in this life, I see the symbols, I see the walking symbols, and I'm in tune with the cues internally and then externally, and how I'm not expertly realized, but I think I'm pretty good at understanding why I've drawn something to you, and how I've changed over time as a result from that.
Yeah,
because
it sounds like the energy that replaces that,
you know,
or is it just healed, and is it just what?
I just feel lighter after if I go through something, it's like, okay, well, clear out that BS. Let's just bring in God, or, you know.
It'll be simpler for me.
But you see at those times, I want to ask you, when that comes up, do you see the assumption and belief and then say, well, that's not really happening right now, and then you are relieved? Or is that how it works? Or how does it work for you when you move some of that stuff?
Well, it's not all the time, because
sure.
You know, I'm blind to certain things.
Totally, yeah.
Or I'm not ready to heal things, but generally just when it takes, it's just like a click, I'll see, you know, what things rhyme. Experiences I have will make sense, and then I'll just kind of
make sense in terms of
bird's eye view of me.
Okay,
like
right on.
That bird's eye view
right
of
on.
Me and seeing me, like I almost like go into oversoul mode where I'm just
right.
Like, oh, this little Jillian, going to the
right. Right.
Okay, that conscious ego personality part of that, whatever that was, let, you know, I'll nurture me.
Great.
To let that go.
Great. Great. So, like, this workshop's about consciously digging through the strata, but all of us will have the experience of something just coming up from under the layers. And so that zooming out to get the bird's eye view on it is how we, you know, if we keep with the analogy of archaeology, like how we see what it really is and label and categorize and classify it and figure out what we're going to do with it. So that the bird's eye view is what I want everybody to gain. We're naturally swept by the emotion, so if we can at the same time also do that. That's why I wanted to know, like, how the process works for you. Because I know that you have had those, obviously not all the time, like you say, but had those experiences of gaining insight into why something's happening and that kind of imaginative and intuitive.
I had this morning where, like, in a maybe months ago, or if it was with someone else, you know, you had a need, you stated a need this morning, and then I, you know, or I had a request about how future interactions regarding some
right.
thing. And in the past, I could have, because it pushed, it, you know, it could have pushed older buttons, I could have responded differently.
Like about responsibility? Or like about what?
About
push a button about
to create ability to, you know,
got it,
yeah. To create something and then be in control of it,
okay, right.
And so, but I, you know, so getting the bird's eye view, like in the past, I'd be like, yeah, you know, like Mars or Pluto, like I want control of that, but then, like, so I was
right
over time, it's like I've been able to recognize those buttons for what they are.
Good.
Push them.
Good. So I want to talk about control, and then so I think we'll also apply could apply theoretically to Glenna somewhat, even though Glenna's Mars square Pluto is from the 5th and Jillian's is from the 6th to Pluto and Virgo, and control is a keyword for Virgo. So I want to talk about that as an evolutionary response to feeling out of control because something's coming at you from the side. So the response that, you know, so then what is control really? And it's just, you know, what is control? Tell me what, not from you first, from you like third or fourth. What is control about from anybody except Jillian right now?
Well, ideally, self-empowerment.
Okay, but what does it look like? What do parts of you assume control should look like? Yeah, I want to do this for a second, because this is a great...
For me, it's brakes on a car and my steering wheel.
Okay, good. Good. And what does it get you?
And I can go where I want with it.
And go where you want. Okay. Yeah. Did you have something?
I guess a control maybe for me might be feeling grounded and stable and...
Okay.
Having an agenda.
And what would that get you? Being like that, what would it lead to?
Accomplishment.
Okay. I just want to look at some of the assumptions that parts of us have, and whether there are savvy minds or are presumptive inner parts. I want to hear a variety of things.
We don't want to be embarrassed.
Great. Please be.
I really have control, and I feel that I don't worry about my balance. My balance. I just know that I have it.
Ah.
Well, if I really have, that's my feeling of control. Oh, fine. Oh, good. Okay. I'm centered.
Okay. Okay.
In a way, first thought.
And what does it feel like when you're not centered?
Kind of scattered.
Scattered.
Don't have the brakes on anything.
Don't have the brakes on anything. And where does that lead?
To kind of like get those loose ends back in.
Yeah.
The desire to want to pull it back in and see if I have some reference.
Okay.
Control with you, I have a reference.
Okay, good. Thank you. Now, and then your idea of what is, because since you're the one who brought up the word control, I'm like vibing on it. So I want to.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, preface it by, you know, drawing attention to my sun, moon, and Mars all in the sixth house.
Understood.
Virgo control also.
Understood, yeah.
And as a part of it.
Okay.
And for me, and then, anyway, Mars, Cancer, Cardinal. But like,
yeah, yeah.
For me, control is like. It's for me. It's how to say. It's wrapped up for me. It's intrinsically wrapped up in paying attention to every detail.
Right.
But loving every it's wrapped up in creation too. So you know, Mars and Cancer, but just like. It's like if I were a god and I created a galaxy or something. It's like I want to have the, you know, the control of the putting my attention and love in every detail because I want it to be perfect.
Okay, good.
And it's the, you know, okay. It's like how, just as you, it's like controlling your energies. You know,
okay.
What you, and how you create, how you met what you manifest.
Thank you. So Pluto in Virgo has an intention to learn how to control, right? But with the Mars moon square from the sixth, square Pluto in Virgo, and the Pluto stationed, you know, standing still, the need for control can get augmented, and the strategies of how to make it happen and how to make sure it happens can just shoot up, can get like a very numerous and intense. Because Mars moon square the soul's mission can be chaos, emotional chaos coming to you. And so this, I just want to point out to her, but I wanted to involve as many people as wanted to say. I wanted to point out to her that the Pluto in Virgo already tries to control, but emotional chaos coming your way makes you develop even more strategies and put more pressure on yourself to stay in control. So, emotional archaeology for you regarding this Pluto. I mean, I'm really focusing on this aspect, and I want to move on and do the whole chart, but I just really want to get into this. It's also especially because Glenna had a similar thing. And we didn't do it that way with you yesterday, because you didn't say the word control, and she did. So, and I vibe on what people say. But, you know, there's a potential for you to overwork to be in control. But the spiritual truth is there's no such thing as control. So, especially as you're learning with Pluto in the eighth, you're intending to learn through intimate partnership, and there's no such thing as control. But it's an adaptive thing to try to protect yourself and your soul's mission. So emotional archaeology for you will be looking at the assumptions about why control is needed. And yes, at the personality level, sun, moon, or in the sixth, great. But underneath, those are ways to develop tools, sun and moon, rational and emotional and, you know, impression as well as reason and ground, you know, but the fact is that you might overwork. So the digging through is looking at the assumptions of why control is necessary, and then going through each instance in your life when you have felt that either you didn't have control and should have, or you did but didn't do it right or enough, and changing the meanings on those files. So that's the emotional archaeology with that Pluto square thing. Yeah, digging through them specifically. I do want to move on, but I wanted to like really get that out.
Thank you for that.
Great. Oh, good. Yeah.
What it is and when it's not and what it could be.
Right.
And then in the soul's deepest place, control isn't necessary.
Right. I mean, the soul level, like I was talking about, the soul level intention with Pluto and Scorpio of being intense and then having to deal with the repercussions of choices of intensity. The soul level intention with the Pluto and Virgo is to improve something. But then you get to the place where you have to understand what really can be improved, like the desiderata, right? The grant me this, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And, what really can, and then what should be improved. You know, so it's kind of like dealing with the debris that's layered over the core intention. Yeah, so being available to make something better. It leaves it open-ended, and your hand, I get the gesture, I get like this, instead of like, I'm available to help somebody. But how different that is with Pluto and Virgo energy.
Do you feel that? It's almost like a square Virgo with all that Virgo
exactly
energy.
Well, and that's why, yeah.
Yeah, the commitment to this quality, precision, craftsmanship in this lifetime, I feel the, really intense precision, even reflected in her decision to come just 1 minute before Pluto.
Yeah, right?
Okay, you ready? Right. At the beginning of the triathlon. I'm here. Okay, go.
Right.
Even in that, and yet the call that the soul is saying, okay, but you gotta let go. You're gonna burn this through other people.
Right. Exactly. Right. And you're gonna encounter others who won't, because like we're in a relationship, I will not let her control things. And that's the conversation this morning. She, kind of in the spirit of wanting something to be good and in helping me, she made an assumption. And then, what'd you say?
Better,
right. It will make, but like for me, I'm a second house son. I will not let anybody control anything.
So it's interesting.
I will come to the table and negotiate.
That you attracted this intention.
No, exactly. And that's kind of why, but that's a lot of the archaeology to be done on the Pluto. And I've never seen it that way. But as soon as you said control, all of a sudden this crumpled up pieces of paper constellated, and I was like, oh, in my mind, I was like, got it. Okay, good.
Okay. You didn't ask me about control.
Right?
Really spazzing out over here.
Oh my God, so am I.
Are you? Well, it's a natural, it's actually a natural human thing. It's a normal, natural human thing. The desire to protect ourselves, desire to be in control, the desire to be the agent of change in our lives instead of feeling that we're at the mercy and whim. So, we don't have anybody with Pluto in Pisces right now, but we have people with Pluto in the 12th, and the intention of the soul is to learn to surrender. Well, what's going to happen? They're going to have human experiences where they actually do surrender, and then they're like, wow, that hurts. Control. So then you're going to have people with Pluto in the 11th or Aquarius, and they're going to have the soul level intention to learn to fit into a group. Well, what happens when you fit into a group? Sometimes you get trampled by a mob. Well, I got to control my participation. And then people with Pluto, it's like control is the natural, is a natural response to being hurt.
Instinctive response.
Yes.
Instinctive survival response.
Because we perceive ourselves to be separate, and so then we experience ourselves to be separate. But I don't know if I mentioned this yesterday, but whatever, this will get edited out. But it's kind of like I'm dealing with personally with ways I've died in different lives. And I can remember traumatic death, and I'm like mad. I'm like, somebody needs to do something about this because I can't deal with that anymore. That can't happen again. So, but if I learn to trust it, then I'm like, well, what if I don't get the stuff that I need to get done? Because that's the memory. There wasn't enough time because I died young or whatever. And so, it's kind of, so of course I will strive to control, but like my Pluto in the 12th says, I need to fit into the bigger picture. What we're talking about with you, the adaptive response of going with the flow, we're talking about weather event that you can't control. That's my future. Relaxing into the flow of things. Your future is getting more proactive. Mine is relaxed, so it's a different thing. Like, you're coming from the 12th, and you adapted really well. And my Pluto's, anyway. So,
awesome.
But the control thing is relevant to every single one of us, is the point. But for her, it's really specific with this soul journey. Okay, so that's the Pluto deal. Now I want to go to the second step, which is the South Node. South Node in Virgo in the 8th echoes here. Picking conditioning environments in many lives that reflect the same kind of energy that the soul level intention of Pluto in the Virgo in the 8th has to do with. So there's going to be issues. She's going to pick families where there are boundary issues, because the 8th is where we learn to merge, or we accidentally get entangled. And there's also going to be issues about responsibility and self-control. There's going to be issues about controlling others and self-control. And there's going to be issues about truth and trust. So that's kind of a base, you know, it's in common where her Pluto is in the same sign as the South Node. Not everybody has that. And actually, I'm going to pull in the conjunction to the true black moon Lilith at 27 Leo, also in the 8th. The Vesta, for me, is a degree too wide, but it's kind of brought in by implication. And so these, you know, Vesta Lilith in Leo in the 8th, there is such an important emphasis on being honest in a natural, open, flowing way, or blocking it because it brings up too much hard stuff. So she's going to have some lives where everybody in the family, she picks a family where everybody's like an exemplar of, I have something difficult to tell you and I love you, versus, hey, let's not talk about anything today or this decade. And so it's going to be back and forth. So she'll have memories of needing that honesty and being born into families that can't do it. And she'll also have memories of being born into families where she might have to hold something back because everyone else is so intense and honest that it's like, I just need some private time once in a while. Like, I don't need you to look into my heart all the time. So she'll have that whole thing, you know. And so we know that about her family system. Square the South Node is, there's several things. First is, we're going to talk about is Neptune in late Scorpio and Argent Suri in early Sagittarius. And these are in the 11th. So again, squares to the nodes I treat as unresolved issues. Person knows many, many things about it, but not enough to feel happy, successful, or healthy. So it's a kind of tripping over your shoelaces or sticking your foot in your mouth or tripping over yourself. Neptune is about how we connect to other realities, how we bring the divine into our daily life, and how we, you know, meditate, mystic, art, creativity. Argent Suri is about conscience and do we listen to our inner wisdom? And so these are, and the Neptune's in Scorpio and Argent Suri's in Sagittarius, so there's an issue of belief and power through belief. Becoming empowered through maintaining one's own belief. Each of these is retrograde, so she's going to have spent some time that seems wasted pursuing Neptunian things, you know, pursuing certain kinds of forms of truth that in the end turned out to be, you know, flotsam and jetsam or not real or not true. She's got some karmic history of seeking truth and having it turn out to be not quite what it seemed in the beginning. The other square to the nodes is Sun Lucifer in Gemini in the 6th. So Sun is the biggest thing in the personality, biggest thing in the solar system, and therefore the biggest thing within us. I think of it as the inner CEO. So like there's a meeting where these couple dozen energies are talking. The Sun should be the one who's running the show. And when the Sun is square the nodes, there's an issue with developing a healthy ego. Sun is one of the markers where we can look at how a person tries to control things, you know, running the meeting in the psyche. And so this is there's a missed step with, misstep or an unresolved issue about what ego looks like and what, you know, and this ego is actually in the 6th. So how can I develop a healthy ego through service, through being useful to others in some way, through providing a useful function, fulfilling a function? But on the personality level, her sanity depends on doing it. But the karmic level, the underneath, it's confusing because she's made choices A and B thousands of times. And at the end, she's like, that doesn't really work. but I think C and D are terrible choices, but I haven't really explored. So then I explore them later, and they don't work out, but A and B are... So it's kind of like this confusion. I know this, but it doesn't work. I don't know that, but I don't think that's going to work either. Adding Lucifer in, talking about, again, healthy ego stuff, but being willing to shine. And with a sun, it means that this entire existential project is wrapped up in learning how to shine, learning how to express a self in a healthy way. One of the things about the Lucifer story, which is told in Living Myth, is that, Lucifer, by the way, we receive it through the Christian mythos. Forget that. That's just the name of the asteroid. We have to go back to the Hebrew version of the same exact story, the fallen archangel, whose name is Samael, S-A-M-A-E-L. I say it Samael. It could be Samael, but whatever. Samael. And when God create, this is according to the Bible, the Genesis business. When God creates Adam, calls all the angels together and says, "Look what I made. This is the greatest creation next to me." And 2/3 of the angels naturally go, "Wow, yeah, great, God, I'll bow down, but you know, please bow down before this wonderful creation. Second only to me in glory." And Samael goes, "Wait a minute. You told us that we were your divine essence and we represented your divinity out there. And now you're out wanting us to bow down before a being made of dirt. I just don't know about that." And God says, "Hey, just do it." It's the patriarchal God, right? And this is the game plan. And someone else says, "If I do that, then, I mean, I love you too much to let you act like an idiot, basically to go against yourself and to act out of integrity. So I can't actually stay here because I can't support you right now, though I love you dearly." So in the Lucifer story, in the Christian mythos, evil, bad, breaking away from God, working against God, forget that, because that's a way later, thousands of years later, of demonizing doubt so that we'll all just go along and do the patriarchal agenda. So, but the original story has to do with integrity. So, what, this guy, this archangel, thinks he's better than God? Shining. Who can, you know, how can you have the arrogance? So Lucifer, some people, and actually Glenna, me, and Jillian are always for some people. And I haven't seen your chart yet, but I'm not sure yet. But we're always for conjunct sun natally, so we have this in common. If you really, really shine, people might want to call you arrogant because they're not sure if they should let you try to be bigger than God. So it's about healthy ego, right? So, but conjunct sun square the nodes, very specifically in that context, there's this thing about being afraid of shining too much. But that leads to avoiding developing a healthy ego. So that's a major issue. So the unresolved issue is, how much can I shine? How much can I really offer service of the kind that feels best to me? How much can I do that without being arrogant and egotistical? Yeah. Okay. So that's an unresolved issue. No, but because we're talking about the squares to the nodes, we're talking about her family system as well. People trying to figure out the right way to have a healthy ego. So you're going to have people in her family whose egos are in the toilets and others who are in the stratosphere. Because this family system is learning about this and it fits her karma, okay, fits her journey. Okay, so, and then conjunct the north node, the last thing for step two, is an asteroid, Pallas Athene. And there are different threads, and she's also represented in that book. There are different threads I work with her. One is a part of us that we try to divorce ourselves from, because we're better, we're more successful if we don't show up as that. It's like the people around us are uncomfortable about it, so we'd rather just kind of keep it. We're more successful if we just go with the program. But it's also about protection, sponsoring others like in a protective way, like I'm looking out for you. So there's a warrior energy here. Well, and Pallas Athene. If you look at the chart, you see that little diamond with the cross below it?
Oh, yes.
Yes. So that's this asteroid. And there's also an issue about loyalty with Pallas Athene. And so on the north node, in the family system and in her karmic history, this is in the second house. So loyalty to one's own value system is sacrificed in order to live in the eighth house of entanglement. I'm aware of what you're feeling, and we're wrapped up together, even if we're not talking about it. But so you being committed to being like a self-esteem warrior, like, gets left out, but all in your family system too. So they couldn't teach you how to believe in yourself. That's the point. Mm-hmm. And how to really stand up for yourself like a love warrior. They couldn't teach you. Yeah, okay. So that's the end of step two. Now, step three is a South Node ruler. And this is Mercury, because Mercury rules Virgo. And so we go straight to the fourth, end of the fifth. Maybe we could read it in the fifth too. I think some people have read it in the fifth for you. I'm going to stick with the fourth because it's tied to Saturn, which is definitely in the fourth. And so she shows up in this family system of Virgo eighth house stuff, which, you know, the desire to be together, but then the perhaps entanglement that results. And I'm not sure where you end and where I begin. In the context of that, she is a Taurus Saturn fourth house figure. Now, living in the fourth house is being in touch with the inner world. Adding Saturn to that, there's this need to be autonomous and need to be competent, right? And in Taurus, it's trying to slow down. So in the chaos of whatever place she finds herself in that fits a South Node, she is trying desperately to figure out how to disentangle from it and slow down so she can have a center of gravity that's just hers. So that's a karmic thing for her all these lives. Yeah. I mean, I know that about you. You know that about you. But in the context of this story, you know, surrounded by chaos and emotional things being thrown at you. And you're just like, I just need to have 10 minutes, you know. But that 10 minutes is like repeated billions of times over millions of years. Yeah. So when, you know, this process of unraveling karma or doing the emotional archaeology and digging down through it, you should just know that regularly doing that without inspiration is really important. Like a daily meditation practice where you don't ever get to the point where, wait, the little light went off on the meter that says, now I need to have 20 minutes by myself. Like, because it's actually been a response, but it needs to be a foundational daily thing. Okay. And then you don't have to, okay, good. Okay, so that's that. Let me just see. I think that's what I want to do with that, and then I want to move on to the North Node and cover that, or do you?
Could you speak to, that's it?
My
preferred role is to slow down and meditate.
Well, you show up as the person who needs that. Yeah. Well, maybe not meditate, but to have your own space. But you're in this eighth house chaotic environment where everyone's entangled. Yeah, but you show up as somebody who has a different set of values too, Taurus and Saturn. You're going to show up with some conservatism. And you're going to show up with an interest in consolidating energy instead of trying to control everything. Like, that's actually your role. But when you try to control things, it's because of the environment you're in.
Because
it's so chaotic. And you need to have control over yourself. Right. And that's that Taurus energy wants to hunker down and send cords into the earth and be like, this is my little castle that I live in. This is my stone tower that can't be moved. Right. But in the context of chaos in the environment, you know, it can be hard to do. Okay. So the North Node, we had talked about the palace on the North Node, but the North Node Pisces in the second, you know, surrendering to your own needs, surrendering to your own value system, surrendering to what is most important to you. I say surrender, allowing yourself to flow with what is most important to you. You'll know what's important to you. If I ask you or somebody asks you, you might not have an answer right away. At this stage in your life, I think you would. But at certain points, you might not really be clear because if you're focused, if you're distracted or just wrapped up in eighth house chaos, you think about what it was like when you were 15 and somebody said, what's really important to you? You'd respond with what you think somebody wants to be important to you, like, because you're so conditioned that way. So, you know, in your maturity, you know, coming into that, but basically also having faith that what is most important to you is actually important. And that's this North Node. And so looking at the eighth house context, every time there's an interaction with somebody that is important to her, she's got to remember where she is in the dialogue and not see it as a seesaw, but see it as she is sitting on one end of a seesaw and the seesaw is real and can be worked. But not just automatically, I want what you want. No, I can't do that. I can't do that anymore. Okay, So that's really the analysis. Do you have any questions or comments or anything about all that? Anybody? Or her?
Yeah, does anyone have any questions for me? Because
I
just wondered if there's anything you're willing to share about insights you have around that karma. So I'm feeling the eighth house chaos and then coming to this need to be true to yourself and looking at that. So insights about anything that
it's like, you know, it's like being submerged into the eighth house and not knowing where I end or you begin, the whole boundaries thing. And so if I don't know where I end or you begin and I'm in this dark Pluto, you know, eighth house place, I can't find my light. It's been really difficult for me to find my light and to shine and express myself. And definitely. I mean, not so much in my sun and Gemini. Yeah, and that's, you know, so yeah, actually finding myself trying on all these things with other people, you know, trying on religions, trying on clothes, or whatever, trying on jobs, so, you know, a vocation.
What feels good?
What feels good?
What part of you can go, oh, when I let myself go into an expansive sense of feeling, where I can just surrender into my bliss, which is my skill and my talent.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any part of you that goes instantly to?
Well, a little bit of music and words.
Okay, that's
and
what I want to do.
Yeah, and spirit. Yeah.
The bliss of oneness.
Yeah.
You know, where I just have to show up and bring my music. Bring my Neptunian part that says, can we just get together around the fire and maybe, and can we just do a radio program? You know, can we talk about these things that I love?
Uh-huh. Exactly.
Where you would be in control of it?
Right. Exactly.
You
pick
what you want on it.
Yeah.
But I want to point out the blind side of control.
What is it?
I want to point out the blind side about control.
Thank you.
It can look like it would be that you would be in control, but like really like participatory in an active way is actually different than being in control of something. So like I don't want you ever to think that you need to be in control of something. I mean, you either, but like,
right.
because that's what it looks like it would look like or what it should be, but it's
like, it doesn't have that kind of form.
It's just like, this is what I want to play with you this way. Do you want to play with me that way?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let's play together.
And that's what happened around the fire last night.
Oh, great.
It was absolutely sort of this flowy spontaneity. And
great.
We just, everyone participated, and then everyone got a little more comfortable participating.
But I have to tell you, I recorded that, like a little bit of that last night, and I listened to it as I was falling asleep, and I was like, oh, I would pick myself apart completely. I'm like, God, I'm like, trying to direct everything, and I was like trying to control everyone, and it was good for me to record that so I could hear myself doing that, because I don't find that too attractive, and to learn a little bit of the grace and to let go, you know.
Did you record the later part?
Yeah, the beauty of
when everybody did just let go and go.
Yeah,
let go and go, surrender.
Yeah.
And
I'm having a knot in my stomach around something, and it hurts in my head too, so that my mental energy is blocked somehow. Because, everyone needs a gas pedal and brakes and a steering wheel. And there's an element of the autonomy that it seems to me that this soul has come to get about control. So not shaming it. I understand what you're saying about you can't control. But it's like, it still seems like you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. So, not all or nothing.
Well, can I say something about the conversation we had?
Yeah.
Like, what I said was, I really need there not to be any assumptions about this thing. But come to me and discuss, and we'll make a decision together But when I find the assumption, it just kind of like shuts me down. Like, I don't do that. So that might look to some of us like she has no control over it. But what's actually happening is she'll get her way in that conversation half the time when we have a conversation down the road. So this idea of control stirs something in us anyway.
It does.
But I mean, the fact is when you seek to have a quality of something, and we're talking about a business arrangement, like being business partners essentially in a certain way was this topic, then like she'll say, well, this is how I want it to be done. And I will say, well, I will consider that. There are certain things where I will say, I'm a second house son, and I say no. Right? And there are other things where I say, that's a really great idea. I can give up my need to control.
I was going to say, you're talking about honoring your needs. But maybe that puts it in a more comfortable context for me, because there's a certain tyrannical feeling.
You can't let go of control.
Yeah.
Right.
Whoa, I'm feeling it in my arms.
Uh-huh.
It's like, ooh, I'm not okay with that.
Right.
I want to grab the steering wheel, and it's not because I want to run you over.
Right. You don't want to feel swept away or out of control.
I want to drive with you.
Right.
And I want to honor my own need for the kind of car I want to be in.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I'm not okay with anyone just driving up and, you know, kind of rolling right over me either anymore. I think I probably have it. So the distinction between this, okay, you get the dignity of owning your own need, and not making it about, there's something in me that reacts to almost feeling shamed about just taking up space, which I know I'm learning.
You must
to take
be Pisces because I feel the same way.
Pluto in the eighth. Pluto in the eighth. Shamed about taking up space. Because you're going to draw people to you who have the effect overpowering you. Because you're learning about power with an intimate relationship. Big people. So you're each draw this Scorpio with Pluto conjunct Venus in the 12th. Jesus. You draw that, and then you test the waters. How much of a right do I have to take up space? And I say, I need to be an equal with you. So you tell me what you want to need. I'll tell you what you want to need and what I want, and then we negotiate. But I bring such a forceful personality, part of you gets triggered. And I think less than you, I think.
Yes.
I think
it's our lesson. And, what's kind of, I don't know, the funky irony is that, like, I'm so Virgo oriented to serve, you know.
I know.
Background.
I know.
My lesson is to that Saturn, in a sense, of like constricting, like taking up physical space and, you know,
but for your own reasons and not as a reaction against other people who seem more powerful.
Right.
That's the archaeology. Because everything that you react to about me is not about me, it's about your buttons.
Exactly.
Same with her.
Exactly.
Same with her. You know, it's a similar kind of Saturnian dynamic
that
I trigger in each of you with different.
It triggers invisibility. It triggers.
Mm-hmm.
It triggers the need to take up space and say, but.
Right. Yeah. But like with each of you, in my different, I'm not trying to make this about me, but I'm observing these tendrils. I'm observing these tendrils because I've worked with each of you as clients and I consider each of you friends. You know what I mean? Like, so I have this perspective, this dual perspective, and also the karmic perspective. I'm aware of that, you know. And
we're all Pluto 8th house. We've all got Pluto 8th house issues.
Right.
About entanglement with power and where we've given it away.
And so, you know, I show up as somebody who says, I'm really clear about what I want.
Yes.
But I kind of demand that you also get clear about what you want. And I will ask you.
Yes,
we attracted
that's
you
good.
For that.
I know.
Because the Pluto and Libra thing needs to have a quality. I might not know how to do it all the time, and there are things I won't budge on, but like I want to know what you think.
Yeah.
And so you know, what I want to get at is this idea of reacting from the past versus being present and recognizing the button. Because when you actually, when Glenna, you specifically actually tell me what you want, it might challenge me. But
and then I
won't have
feel that, because I can feel it when, I mean, at least in my experience.
Right.
Like, I felt that arrive at you and maybe you weren't too happy about it.
Right.
But it's okay.
Good.
It's new.
Good.
I I think there's more of that I'm being called to, or that I'm challenging myself courageously to say, no, own your truth.
Good.
Kind of like you told me about these guys, you know, go ahead and just allow them to have their experience.
Right. Right.
Deal. So the whole thing that I can allow you to have your reaction and not feel like I'm going to get shot now.
Exactly. Exactly.
Last time I spoke my truth like that, honey, you got run through, right through the kidney.
Right.
You know, somebody just came up behind you and get her out of here.
Right.
Off with her head, or, you
know. Yeah, right.
Totally. It feels like that in myself. Mm-hmm. I can do that. So the more I do it with this empathetic, even if you do react a little, then you can go, And we can feel the energy somehow, because it's big energy.
Mm-hmm. It's about power.
I know.
It's about being able to be empowered. Do we have the right?
There's some kind of I felt it in Africa with Musevni, because he says this is a democracy. That's the surface. But really, if you say anything, even a peaceful protest, you get tear gassed or shot, even if you're a pregnant woman peacefully walking down the street, right? So I got to experience that in Africa, the feeling of that. Mm-hmm. So I'm not okay with that anymore, you know? But I also don't believe in overpowering. I believe that we can listen to each other and get it out and go, oh, okay, that's your need.
Right.
Here's mine. Sometimes you have to agree to disagree. That's fine. But I have to be true to my own okay, you know, that feeling in my kidney. when I start to feel that, it's like, okay. Yeah.
Mm. I wanted to notice it. I want to share something about that, because you know, this whole Lucifer sun square my nose and speaking up and like the issues, past life issues surrounding that, that has been, you know, examined from lots of different angles, but and I feel it too in my bones. But in one of my past lives, I've been a slave, you know, a black female slave, sexually abused, and in one Akashic record reading, saw me attempting to flee through the Underground Railroad and across the border into like Niagara Falls. You know, it was at the time when they had like these posters that said, you know, it's like shoot a black person $50 or whatever it was.
Oh my.
And so as I was attempting to flee, I was shot in the back and killed. So I have this really, I've had at different stages of my life, I've had like bouts of agoraphobia, fear of making too much noise, fear of being seen in public places, let alone speaking up when I go out. And so, which is sort of like the Saturn constricting my Mercury in Taurus, like not feeling like I'm like I can't speak.
Can't speak out.
Because I can't speak, you know, I can't shine, I can't speak.
For you to speak, you're just a farmer.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And Chiron and Aries in the third, and that's sort of accentuated. Like when I'm in a public place, I get really nervous around other people, and I've had to work on that, massage that, so I can be with other people, you know, in a healthy fashion, not feeling like I will be persecuted or shot, or you know, I feel that level of anxiety, you know. It's life or death.
And it seems to me that the two things that intuitively stand out for me that are your benefits, this would be your tinctures for you now. The Taurus, just the slow.
Yes.
Medicine.
And I loved hearing what he was saying, because all of a sudden I was going, oh, and here she is on this Taurus-y piece of property, to know that that's kind of the thing that soothes your inner Mercury. Your mind gets to slow down into the animal energy of calm and safe.
Right.
And the Pisces, it goes, oh, I get to surrender to what I love to do. I mean, those are some. If I were going to do your chart, I'd say you spent some time on Taurus and Pisces, and absorb the energies out. That's what I would do.
Mm-hmm. The North Node
because the hyper punishment, the hyper fear of I'm going to lose my life.
Yeah.
Well, this lifetime is about gentle surrender to your values, what you love. And enchanting experience radio. And here we are, folks. And my name is Jillian. And I think it's time for us to take a gentle journey down the Nile. And it's not about the night. Whatever you could, smooth, and just be able to surrender to the flow of your imagination in the most protected and safe. And I just don't have to control things because you know what? Look at me, I am so awesome. Don't you see yourself going there?
You. Well, you guys definitely don't understand this control thing anyway. I mean, that's a lot better way to go.
Yeah. That's a lot better way.
And I can control it if I want to, but it's not.
And I do have control
over
myself.
Yeah, exactly.
And when I feel not heard, or I can puff up, it's a natural instinctual thing, isn't it?
Yeah, because can we heal the control wounds and then come back to it gentle? I feel the hands on the steering wheel, white knuckle type of control versus just the country drive. Oh, look.
Yeah,
I'm going there.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Intentional.
Exactly.
So there's no shame in that.
It's just the treat goddess.
Yeah.
Thank you for chocolate. She just drops this in front of us.
Delight to see you try.
Yeah, I'm wondering if where the teacher decided to slip out here.
I think all of our tea and coffee all kind of caught up with us.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh, yeah, but yeah.
What? All about the same time.
What, diarrhea?
No, peeing.
Oh, we all have to do our thing.
You need to pee.
Yeah, I have to do it.
But there's also an intensity going on.
Yeah.
I mean, on
energetic
level. Yeah, that's right. So that's another piece
of that.
I'm going to go pee out my intensity.
Okay, I do too.
Seriously, I'm not kidding. I really think it's helped my emotional body. I allow it to go out.
Thank you.